Welcome to the Business of Show Business podcast with me, Jamie Boddy. On this podcast, I'm going to be chatting to industry experts and up-and-coming creatives as we unpack the side hustles, the stories, and the skills that make the entertainment and creative industries tick. So if you want to thrive and not just survive and build the career that you deserve, you're in the right place. Hello and welcome to the Business of Show Business. And today we're going on a little bit DIY. I'm joined by a West End performer who you may recognize as a TV carpenter. It is Wayne Perry. So Wayne has been in the original West End cast of Bombay Dreams and Rent and has seen shows like Casualty, Emmerdale and DL and Pasco. And although he's still got a fabulous set of lungs on him and he can still sing like a star, a lot of viewers will know him now by his DIY expertise and his presenting skills. So in this episode, we'll be talking about presenting, performing and the business of show business. Wayne, how's it going?
It's good. It's lovely to hear all of that. Yeah. You kind of... Wow.
Is it weird that I've locked you in a room and I'm like, listen to how good you are. I'm going to throw it at you.
I'll take it.
But it's like I'm trying to get better at, because I think in the creative world, you're only as good as your last job, and you don't sometimes sit in the fact of, wow, I've done really well. So how does that feel?
It feels good. And I think why I agreed to chat with you is all of what you've just said in the, as an actor, I would never scream about what I've achieved and what I've done. But as a carpenter and as a presenter, I almost feel like the TV carpenter is an alter ego person, which gives me the confidence to kind of go, yeah, this is, if you book me, this is what you get. So it's kind of nice that we're getting to chat about this and kind of just unfolding that and just thinking about that a little bit more and hopefully offering some top tips.
And one thing I absolutely love about your career that it screams transferable skills. And that's something I always bang on about, whether it's dealing with people, learning script, problem solving. And we spoke a lot just off air about how you've got like time segments and we'll jump into that more. But I think performers, watch this. Listen, your career doesn't have to be defined by your time on the West End. You can do so much more. Mm-hmm. So jumping back, Art Said, great school.
Yes.
You left early though to be in Rent. And I couldn't believe that Rent is only 1998. You're so youthful. But I was like, wasn't that like the 50s?
During the war?
Yeah. So what was that like, first of all, at college and then leaving early? You're that unicorn in third year who like grabs the job and leaves early. How was that?
It was amazing. I love my time at Arts Ed. For me, coming from Leeds, it was the best thing in the world. Just be in London, doing what I loved. And then the elusive third year, you do your getting your agents and getting a job. And I was the person who everyone thought would be like the Marius in Rent. My voice was very romantic lead, and I thought that would be the route I'd go. I never even auditioned for Rent when it came round. At the time, it was the show that everyone, it was the Hamilton of this generation. It was what everyone was talking about. And they couldn't find a swing. They would, and it was Pippa Alien casting. It was her first ever casting job. She was actually our resident director on it originally. So she'd never cast a show before. So she was brought in to look outside the box and find rock talent and go to places where you wouldn't normally get musical theatre performers. And they couldn't find an Angel and a Benny and just a general swing. And I'm mixed race. So at the time I looked Italian, Hispanic. They were like, well, he can go for Angel. And I went in for an audition. I had cast the show already, apart from that one role. I auditioned on a Monday while still at college. Then she called me back on the Wednesday, back then when they used to give you sheets of music to go back and do the material on the Wednesday. And then I got a call Wednesday night saying, can you go to New York on Friday? Because we want to audition you for the role in America. And I was still at college, so I had to like go to, and go, can I have Friday off rehearsals?
In your ballet time. Yeah,
please, can I go? So I flew to New York on the Friday and met all of the American creative team. And I worked out it was cheaper to fly me to New York for the weekend than fly all of them to come and meet me. And then I auditioned. And then 2 weeks later, I found out I got the job. And 2 weeks later, I started. So it was like a whirlwind of a gig. But just, and then, because that was around about April. And so I kind of rehearsed the show, got the show up and running. And then I went back to college, did the show through the daytime. And then I'd swan off and do the actual West End show in the evening. But it was, for a first job, it kind of set my career in a certain way. Bearing in mind, like I said, I was always the Marius-y kind of guy. But then to be known in a rock show and have that, you know, be surrounded by that crazy American cast came over and the buzz around the show, And I did that show for 2 years. I did the whole run in the West End with it.
I love when the auditions first come around, you're like, no, I need a barricade. I'm not auditioning. And they're like, you were perfect for it.
Yeah.
And I guess like also being in that atmosphere, because I said there's certain shows like Hamilton, Rent, that maybe they have no idea how big it is going to be, but being around that like echo chamber must have been like so life-changing just for you as a person.
It was what it did, even though the show, I enjoy the show, I love the show. I don't think looking back now, it was my show. You know, there's certain shows you do in your career and you go, that's the one that sums me up as a performer. Yeah. That definitely wasn't it. But what it did, being in the original West End production of Rent and knowing that Piperalian back then used to bring people in for 9-10 recalls at a time. Yeah. It was full on, and the casting process for that show was like over a year, and people had been in time and time. I knew people, like I said, had 10 recalls for it and hadn't got it. Yeah. So to know that I'd got that gig, even be it last minute, on my CV as my first job out of college, Rent, covering two principals and all the four ensemble, meant that it opened doors for the second job. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I knew then that it just set a precedent that it must be all right to have gone through all of that to get there. So it definitely opened doors down the line.
I think that's what you're great there, because everyone will get a first job, but not everyone will get a second job. So that's obviously marrying up your skills, how nice you are. Yeah. So let's think life then after End and auditioning. What was that? What was life like for you as a jobbing actor, singer? Because although you still do gigs and sing, you predominantly work as a presenter now. So what was life though like for you as a performer? What did you love, and maybe what did you not love?
I loved everything about the industry. I was really fortunate that I never got to do, I never got to do the Mariuses. I never got to do the long...
He will come out of retirement now.
I never got to do those long running shows. I ended up, and I'd like to say that I chose this. I really didn't. It's just that circumstance and auditioning and landing the gigs. But I did just new shows. And I seem to, I've never handed a show over, and I've never joined a show that's been established. So I've always opened and pretty much closed them. And I've all been at the Shaftesbury Theatre nearly, so which is famous for opening and closing shows. So with lovely breaks in between, but did Rent. I did a show called La Trek, about Toulouse-Lautrec. Peggy Sue Got Married with Ruthie Henshaw, who's a good friend now. And then I went on and did Bombay Dreams. And Bombay Dreams was probably my last big show. And that, again, I did. It was back in the day when you do a year in these, or 2 years. Yeah. So Bombay Dreams, I did that for 2 years. And I was the alternate lead in that, which was amazing. That, and I said earlier, there's certain shows that sum up you. For me, that show is Indian Summer. It was at where Wicked's on now. It was a beautiful big, and it just been renovated after Starlight had been in there. My wife was in that show, Starlight, so we booted her out for Bombay Dreams to go in.
Like, I'm paying the mortgage this month.
Yeah. You're out of here. And that show was just a dream. Again, I was the alternate lead, so I got to sing, act and dance just at the right level of everything, you know, that really showed me. So for me, that was the show that I felt most at home. And then I did that thing that all musical theatre people do. Well, back then you go, well, I want to be in TV. I want to try my hand at the TV stuff. And just by fluke, not by fluke, maybe, I don't know, I auditioned for a show called D.L. and Pascoe, which was a BBC drama. At the time, it was a big deal. It'd been going 6-7 years. It was their primetime BBC show. And there's D.L. Pascoe, and they needed a third detective, a younger detective. And they needed a Northern, I'm from Leeds, Asian, I'm half Pakistani. And they needed to be like 26, 27. And I kind of ticked all of those boxes. Yeah. And it was my first tele audition. I auditioned. And what I love back then is if somebody likes you and they want you to do a gig, they'll try and make it work for you. This is casting people. Yeah. So I remember auditioning, going in for my recall, left the building, and then the casting director called me back and said, Wayne, we want to see you again. Just chill, relax, be fine. And actually, just before that, sorry, in the first recall audition I had, she videoed me, and then she stopped the audition. She says, "We're going to do it again," but she showed me the videotape.
Oh, okay.
This was rare, and I was like, "What?" She says, "Look, you're amazing as an actor when you say your lines, but when you're listening, you're doing theatrical reaction where you're telling the audience what you're thinking. Most people have nothing on their face." Most people if you look out of an audience, they don't react to what you're saying. They're just listening. So she says, sit at home with your partner, look in the mirror and just do your script, but don't Don't think, don't do anything. Just don't do anything, rather than mugging it, because you're, because normally you'd say to the audience, this is what I'm thinking. I'm feeling sad. And I remember just that, again, that was just one of those little tips that even in an audition, because she wanted me to get the job, it worked. And then anyway, when I went back for the recall, again, she went, relax, chill. And I got the gig. And I did that for 2.5 years and learned TV, and it was filmed on film. It was old school. Do you know what I mean? With focus pullers and lighting and everything. And to be in a cast where there's only four of you who stay for every film, and it's a new cast every 6 weeks. So you get the security of knowing it. I've totally waffled on about my random career.
But I think and that kind of springboards another question, where like maybe in a non-creative or non-freelance career, a path may be more linear.
Yeah.
It's, I will be a junior, then a senior, then maybe duty manager, whatever career that is.
Yeah.
Not always the case, but in the arts, it's not that straightforward anymore.
No.
And like you said, you may work with one casting director and then they're off on another project, so you need to find other work. Mm. So I think it's really good for listeners to be like, okay, actually, these aren't side steps. They're still steps forward, but maybe in a different pathway. And I'm sure, although maybe some of the skills like the theatrical listening was... not a hindrance, but different, you're starting to change. Yeah. There were so many transferable skills to set. Like you said, working with different people, learning your lines, listening, was probably transferable from your time in theatre.
Oh, absolutely. And I approached the TV like it was a theatre show, as in, like in a theatre, you have 5 weeks to rehearse, and by then you know your lines. On TV, some people just lift up, like the guy who played DL, he would literally look at his monologue in like as they're setting up the shot and just do it. So the first 5 week block of filming, I learned it like theatre, and I literally learned it back to front, and I could say the lines whilst doing a shopping list in my head. It was, you know, I had to learn it like I would in theatre, because it's all I'd ever learned and known. Then when it came to that, the second film, you have like a 3 week break while they prep for the next one, then you do another 5 weeks filming, and it's a whole new film again. So it's brand new cast. I thought, I'm going to try and do it like DL. I'm going to just be a bit loosey goosey.
Yeah.
Day one, I couldn't do it. The nerves, just the panic. It became more about remembering my lines than actually acting and enjoying it. And I learned then that I needed to go back to my acting, my theatre way, and learn it like I'm going to be saying this for the next year rather than the next 5 minutes. And I think that's how I've always had to do lines now.
Well, and that's why they say so many theatre actors are phenomenal on TV and film, because they are adaptable. They have that kind of, that grit. Not to say that if you go purely into TV and film, you don't have that.
No, but what you have grit when you do theatre. And that's the biggest thing I teach my 17-year-old daughter. Just have grit, because... You need it. That's the bit.
Yeah. So obviously your wife's in musical theatre.
Yeah, Anna Woodside. Yes.
Yes. And your daughter is also training. So you're in quite a theatrical musical theatre house. So although you're maybe not treading the board so much yourself, you're adjacent to it. How is that? Are you the parents that are like, don't dance and sing? Or are you like, no, do it. It was the best thing that happened in our lives.
Both.
Yeah.
My daughter is currently at Brit School. My wife, Anna Woodside, we worked out she's done like 20 odd West End shows. She's she's amazing. She's is Anna. And our daughter always loved theatre and always loved watching Anna do shows and back when I used to do them. But then I would actively disencourage her from doing it. So she'd sing and stuff, and I'd kind of push her away from it and try to get her to do other things. And then Anna was really honest with me. She went, Wayne, if our daughter showed this much positivity and drive for tennis, you'd be the dad who'd take her to every tennis match and every tennis tournament. The fact that it's theatre and we know the industry, you're actually being horrible. And she's actually really good. She's actually far more talented than me and Anna were at her age. She's currently auditioning for drama colleges, and I watched some of her self-tape videos. I'm like, how the hell? Like, you're amazing. So to answer your question, we're a proper theatrical family now, and because it's the one thing that she loves, and we try to support her without being like the nepo kid kind of thing. And to be fair, you can't, like you said, you could potentially get her the first intro, but we're trying to teach her to do the second and third and fourth gig. And I think she'll do it, hopefully. Yeah. To be fair, I don't even care if she does or doesn't do it, as long as she's happy doing it. As a parent, that's all you want.
I mean, if you ever meet Anna or Wayne in person, they look so youthful. I would not believe you have a daughter at all.
Thank you.
So let's talk now current tense. TV presenting DIY expert. First of all, when did that inkling come in? And what was that mind shift switch? Because there's so many performers that listen to this podcast who maybe want to change career, whether that's in the arts or completely. And it's scary because you're auditioning with the same people. You're going to the same classes, networking events. And then you start removing yourself and you worry if the friendships will still be there. So I guess, when was that first inkling you wanted to maybe shift into presenting? And second of all, what was that mindset shift like?
Okay. It was a bit of a happy accident. Our daughter had just been born. So 17, 18 years ago, it was when the major credit crunch happened. We were renovating a house. Background, my dad's a builder, so I'd always been around builders and stuff. And I ended up having to do a lot more in the house than originally thought, just money-wise. And I renovated our whole house. I fitted a kitchen and doors and just did bits. Like a lot of people, some people who are a bit savvy with the tools will have a go. And it was need, and you know, we needed a kitchen, so I fitted it. You know, I didn't have money to pay anybody. And then my wife wasn't working because we'd just had a baby. All the jobs, I'd just come off DL and Pasco, all the jobs I was being offered were away on tour. And I was like, I've got this brand new baby, I don't want to be away. So my wife just pimped me on Facebook. And was like, my husband can do wallpaper and I can put these gorgeous acoustic panels up that are behind me. I can do all of these little things that you need to do. And started doing carpentry and then realized I didn't have to take the job that was being offered. I could earn a living locally and just doing odd jobs and things, never thinking it was going to be a career. I turned that down. My dad had offered it years ago and now I'm a performer. And then I did some carpentry for this guy who happened to be a TV producer, who just created a brand new show called The Great Interior Design Challenge, which was a prequel to Interior Design Masters, the one that's on with Alan Carr. And he said, look, we need a carpenter who didn't mind being on TV. Have you ever been on TV before? And I said, no, I didn't want him to know I was an actor. Yeah. And I rocked up literally with an Aldi bag of tools and like a hatchback car. And I was cutting wood off the edge of a curb. And then the other builders that were there, who are friends now, who, you know, laugh at me now. And they had full-on kit and vans and festools and all the bits. And I was literally, like I say, cutting a piece of timber off the edge of a curb. But my contestant won and got through to the next round. And I loved it. And I started just work. And then the producer was like, do you want to do more of these? And that world, once you're in it, is all the same people. It's the same design producers. It's the same production companies who do the interior design and do garden shows. We all know each other.
Yeah.
And once you get chatting and you're amenable and you're nice and you're not horrible and they trust you and they like you, they'll keep offering you work. So I kept getting offered all of these. So my summers, I did about 3 or 4 summers. These are all summer shows, the garden and interior design shows. And there became a point where every time my acting agent would ring, my heart would sink a little bit. And I never thought this, like musicals and theatre and TV I lived and breathed it.
Yeah.
And if someone had told me I would give it up, I'd be like, you're stupid. No, this is what I do. And I've had a lovely career doing it. And there was no reason to stop it. But there was a defining moment when I got an email on a Friday night from my agent saying a film with Colin Firth that is happening. They've seen your show, your acting show reel. You've pretty much got the job. You need to go in on Monday, meet the director. And then you meet the director and then if all's well, but it should be, you start filming on Friday for 2 weeks in Croatia or somewhere with Colin Firth. You've got some lovely little scenes. And I literally opened the email, looked at it and I went, I can't be asked. And I thought, I can't be asked to go in on the Monday. And my wife, Hannah, was like, you fool. This is a film with Colin Firth. And I was like, but I'm supposed to be digging a hole on that show and doing that next week. And that means I've got to rearrange those and I won't be able to film that and that. And I'll let those people down. And my wife went, look, you need to sack your acting off then. You need to make the decision. You know, what are you holding on to being the actor? And I realized I was enjoying the carpentry more than the acting. So I rang my agent on the Monday. I said, we need to have a chat. And he was brilliant. Philip Belfield and Ward, he was like, absolutely fine. I totally could see it coming. You're doing brilliantly on that way. You know, we'll always be here if you ever need us again. But yeah, let's call it a day.
I think that's really nice to hear, because I think there's that friction if you leave the industry, whether that's by choice or due to injury, whatever, and you feel like you lose this part of your identity, but you can still find that buzz and joy in something else.
Yeah.
I also feel like everyone needs Anna. Like, she'll get you work. She'll say it how it is. Like, can we just hire Anna, I think, to be
She's my secret manager in the corner. But I think it's... The bit that I realised I was loving about theatre, and people who are in theatre will get this, is the dressing room banter. It's the going to the pub, it's having the chats, it's not always the show itself, it's the behind the stage bit, it's the in the wings doing your crossword, or having, you know, you meet certain people in your traffic. And I realised doing these TV makeover shows, I had all of that. We'd all go to a hotel for 3 nights, have drinks in the bar, you chat, you're on set. You're part of a collective team. It's not all about you. It's about the contestants. It's you're working with the camera crew. And I had the bit that I enjoyed the most.
Yeah.
It's not always necessarily, when you're young, it's all about the talent. It's all about the skills and the performing. But for me, it was the bit, other bits that I thought, well, you know, as long as I still do those bits, I still feel like I'm performing in a different way.
I think those bits heavily lean into the post-show blues. When you end a contract, you've seen this person for 9 months, 10 months, your best friend, and then all of a sudden you might not see them again because they're on tour, you're on tour. What I also loved was what you said, that when you was on this show, cutting that wood on the curb, but they liked you and they trust you. And as we say, marketing, like people buy into brands they know, like, and trust. So your personal brand, they got to know you, they liked it, they trusted that you could deliver in those high, like, intensity stakes. So
which I think comes from theatre background, from that. Absolutely.
100%. So now let's talk TV life. So you're on Morning Live, ITV, BBC. What is a typical day like? We're speaking off camera, you said sometimes you have 8 minutes to do a DIY segment. So what is it like when you're on the set? Do you do rehearsals beforehand? Do you have in-ear? Is there auto cue? What is life like as a presenter?
All of those. So it depends which show it is. So something like Alan Titchmarsh, Love Your Weekend, that's a pre-record a couple of weeks before. They'll block do those. And you kind of shoot them as live, but you can stop and start. Morning Live. Shall I run you through a Morning Live segment?
I'd love that. Yes, please.
So I'm booked to do a Morning Live next week. I don't know what my item is yet. They haven't decided. They're like, are you free, available? Yeah, I'm available. And what will happen is I'll get a message going, we're thinking of doing insulation, or how to keep your house warm or something. Yeah. Doing an item about it. Stop your pipes from freezing, say. So then I'll chat with the researcher. We'll come up with the content. I'll talk to them like I'm talking to somebody who wants to learn how to insulate their pipes. And they'll go away and double fact check it also, because it's BBC, everything has to be perfectly fact checked. Once it's agreed, I'll make a few little props probably at home. And then I'll go up the night before, because we film at six. We have to be in studio at 6 a.m. I'll go the night before, be in studio at 6 for makeup and production meeting, where I'll speak to my researcher we've planned the item, and they've double checked it with the presenters and with the director. And then we rehearse it and we go on the floor, and the show goes on at 9:30. And in that time, the whole show will be prepped and practiced and run. I'll probably run my item twice if it's very prop heavy. And it's a lot for camera angles and all of those different things. And then the show goes live. So by the time I'm doing it live, I've done it twice.
Okay.
They know what's coming up. I've got my in-ears, which is quite a bit like this sometimes.
Yeah.
And there's a little top tip. There's a thing called open or switch. So open is you hear what the gallery is saying to everybody. And switch is they have to press a switch to speak to you. I asked for switch, and there's no, you're not a better performer than if you have open. It doesn't mean, some people just don't want the constant chatter in their ear. Some people like it and they can zone it out. But I can feel myself getting drawn into this and answering this whilst on camera.
Two sugars, please.
literally. So if you ever get to do TV with in-ears, feel free to say, can I be on switch, please? There's no shade about that. And they're literally just giving me timings as I'm doing the item. So I'll be talking the presenters and they'll be like, yeah, you've got 1 minute left, but the maximum length is 8 minutes, and that's it's normally about 6.5 to 8. So as you're doing it, I find myself talking quicker and quicker and just like going, I know I've only got 2 minutes to tell you all of this stuff, so we're going to do it really, really, really quickly.
Have a drill.
Try not to cut yourself, try not to hit your thumb. But I love it. It's an instant, I don't have to learn lines. And I realize as well, the one thing about acting is I'm rubbish at learning lines. And as I'm getting older, it's worse. So, and to be, you know, just to be able to do a show where I get to be myself, which I never thought I would want to be on TV or camera. Me, I was always hiding behind a character or hiding behind, not hiding, but just behind a role. Yeah. Someone gave me the words to say. This time I realized just I have enough to say about the topic I'm talking about. I get excited about teaching people DIY, as do the accountants on the show or the doctors. They get excited about talking about tax. They get excited talking about illnesses, and they're hired because they animate and make that subject amazing.
Yeah.
I like to think I have that buzz when it comes to DIY, which is why I think I've done quite well in the DIY sector and the world that I'm in.
I mean, it's an interesting point because doing a lot of the junket scene as a journalist, I have to interview a lot of actors, so grateful for that. But when I ask them a question as them, they panic, they freeze, because as an actor, you have that character to lean into. So it is very interesting that you said that. And that's why I think a lot of performers think, you probably get this quite a lot. It's like, I'll just be a presenter. And I'm like, great, follow your dreams. But it's actually quite hard. Like I said, that in-ear alone and sticking to time and not being like over the top unless you're pitching that show. I think there's so many other skills that you either do have or don't have or can't learn. So I think it's quite nice that you showed that.
And again, I've listened to quite a lot of your podcasts, and it's that thing of being a presenter. There's not, if you look at the TV landscape, there's not many presenters who just present. A lot of people are a doctor. And they've come from, like, you know, Dr. Ranch, for example, he's a friend of mine. You know, he presents now because he's a doctor first, or you're a chef first, or you're a property expert, or, mine was a happy accident of being a DIY. But the moment I made that decision to not do the film with Colin Firth and become a carpenter, I then became the TV carpenter, because I realized that Wayne Perry, or the guy in orange who's on, you know, on TV, I always wore orange on my TV shows. If you name yourself the TV carpenter, I'm a brand, and I'll happily shout out about what the TV carpenter can do for your show, do for your column, for your paper. I can big up that person. I'm really rubbish at bigging up Wayne Perry as an actor, but as a presenter and a carpenter. This might sound arrogant now, but I've only learned this now going, you'll be lucky to have me as the TV carpenter, because what I bring with that character is knowledge, fun, joyfulness, always wear something happy, smiley, and you get content for your TV show. You need 8 minutes filled. And once you realize that mind shift of every production, whether it's a paper or a TV show, they have to fill content and they want good content. But if you can offer content, an 8-minute slot, or you can offer a column or an article. For them, it's pages they don't have to think about. And I think I've become quite successful because I've shifted my mindset to helping them rather than asking them what to hire me. I'll help you. So it's just swapping it over a little bit.
I absolutely love that, because I always bang on about you are the solution to someone's problem. And quite often when people are so in the musical theatre world, they don't understand that. Obviously, you're not going to go knock on someone's door and be like, ah. But what I mean is, like, what shows are hiring your skill set? Like, what do you enjoy doing? There's all these pieces of the puzzle, as opposed to you just auditioning for shows because you think you're meant to. So I think that's really nice that you have showed that. So what other transferable skills came from your theatre and TV acting to you as a presenter? So we've spoken a bit maybe about dealing with people, that stakeholder management and stuff like that. But what other skills do you think are transferable? Or anyone listening who wants to maybe move out of onstage work, what skills should they think, actually, that will make me employable?
Reliability. I think, I don't know if anyone saw like Hannah Waddingham's speech when she won the BAFTA, and she was like, hire a musical theatre performer, we won't let you down, right? Mm-hmm. And why that resonated with so many people, I think, was do what you say you're going to do. And you see, I think a theatre person will always... I think we should be. We'll be there on time. We'll know their stuff. We'll deliver when it's needed to be delivered. And I think I always make sure, even if my job every day was to make somebody a coffee, I make sure that they have their coffee. And it might sound like it's the smallest run on the ladder, and it's that, you know, it's only making coffee. But if I never have to think who's receiving that coffee, if that person never has to think, oh my God, I need to get my coffee on their way in, because it's going to be there because I know that Wayne's going to have it delivered for me,
yeah,
then I know I can relax and not think about it. So I've realized that my whole career is I've made sure that no one ever has to second guess whether I'm going to do something for them. And I also, I like to think I go a bit above and beyond, but always my items are always on time. They're delivered. Even I had a column in the Sunday Times. It was only supposed to be a 10-week column and it ended up doing 62 weeks. So, and the reason why it would do that, I think the subject was good. And,
yeah.
But she never once had to ask me for copy. So it always arrived on a Monday evening for the Sunday. And it was, I was really quiet about it under the scenes. So it was always just done. And I used to just probably send 4 or 5 columns ahead a week. So it was like I'd do a block of them and send them. And it meant that my editor, she's busy. She's doing a paper.
Yep.
She's got column inches to fill. She's trying to find that. Like she sometimes would email going, have you got any topics? We need some bigger, yep, you know, bits. She knew that half a page of the Sunday Times was always delivered and was always there. So just by not... No one ever had to ask me for it. And I think that's become my thing when I know I've worked with TV production companies, like we never have to worry about you. And if you think about all your friends or people who you're in shows, there's people who might be the most talented, but there's the people who are the most reliable.
Yeah.
And the ones will always work because I'd rather hire somebody who might not be as talented as number one talent. I'd go for maybe the number two, but I know I never have to worry that they're going to be shady and not turn in, yeah, or not be there or be sick or six different if you're ill, but will deliver what they say they're going to deliver.
Yeah.
And I think that's my biggest thing that I think I've transferred over. There's a lot of people don't do that.
So true, because I think, as you said, it's not always most talented. It's the most consistent and most persistent people that...
Yeah.
And people want to work with nice people.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talented people out there that are not very nice. Yeah.
And without speaking for my wife, I'll probably get my wife onto this podcast, but you know, she works on shows now and she's on the other side. And everyone, she says it's amazing how many people talk. Like if they want to fill a role, she knows 3 other cast members in different shows and she'll go, oh, we're dance captains on different shows. And she'll be like, who do you know? Who have you got? Who's nice company member? Who's consistent? And yeah, so the list comes that way rather than, she doesn't say necessarily who's your most talented, you know.
Yeah.
She wants to know, they've got to be talented because they're course, in a Western yeah show, but she needs to know that they're going to be a great fit for the show and are going to be reliable.
Yeah. So looking through that business lens, you spoke about maybe some of those transferable skills and how you have mindset shifts as a presenter. Mm-hmm. What business skills would you maybe, or wish you had known as a performer maybe, or what business skills would you recommend to a young performer now saying, look at the industry like this or be on social media? What are maybe some of the business skills you think performers should focus
performers
on?
Performers. It's because I talk to my daughter all the time about this stuff. And I was really good, I think, which I wish I'd have done more at, is knowing who you do your research and knowing who you're talking to. I always, my daughter came home from Brit the other day, school, and she said, oh, we had so-and-so in from head of Disney casting or whatever. I went, what's her name? She went, I don't know. I was screaming. I was like, Eva, like, you might meet this person and in a year's time when you're auditioning and then you go, oh, do you remember me? I met you at Brit, you know? So have a little diary and just put everybody's name you've met. I used to do it as an actor. I'd put the casting person, what show it was I auditioned for them. Because they won't remember me, but then if I've got it down as a, you know, it become my little black book of, oh, I've met that person twice before. I got a recall for that. Or I got to the final for that and I didn't get it, you know, and you realize, when you're in the industry long enough, you not getting a gig isn't because you're not the best person. It's just, you know, the way it works. So I would probably do that. And I do that now within my TV world because the researchers and the people you work with who are the person who's helping me work out my item, they'll be the producer next year or they'll do their own show. And I've been doing this now for 15, 20 years in the TV side of stuff to realize that those people go on. So maybe keep a note and keep a track of who you're meeting along the way. They'll help you.
And it's so important, again, similar thing when I'm lecturing at colleges and people are like, I want to be in this show. And I'm like, well, do you know who the casting director is? And they're like, no. And I'm like, do you watch the credits? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, maybe you should, just because you could have literally been in a room at a networking event with them and not actually realised.
Yeah,
so I think it's so important. The skills and the talent, I don't know what the percentage would be, is actually quite a small part, isn't it? It's the hustling and everything else that will get you maybe the career you want. Moving over to TV then, what are some of the myths you maybe thought about working in TV, whether that's as an actor or presenter, and actually when you're on the set, you're like, this is completely different than what I think. Because again, a lot of people think, I'll just do TV. And again, it's, you've got to pick up your, or rework your package to get you onto TV. So maybe what are some of the myths about TV, either as a presenter or as an actor?
Myths?
Well, not myths. Maybe
I'm just, I think I could probably give you some a top tip rather than
busting those myths. Give
gives us a top tip as in to get into TV, particularly if you want to be, if you've presenter or something like that, is have a press pack. And I've heard you speak about press because it's what you do, but I don't think actors get this. And I used to help a lot of the interior designers on Interior Design Masters, so, you know, and we'd be filming with them, and when people would be getting to the final, there might be the finalists of Interior Design Masters, for example. And I'd say to the contestants, have you got a press pack? And they're like, well, what's one of those? Well, a press pack is your biog, a little blurb. It's your headshot, a really clear headshot. Maybe take the background out so it's just on a white background or whatever. And have it all ready so that, because what will happen is once you're on TV or you're doing a show, the show's on TV, if you haven't got an agent, a magazine might ring you up and go, we want, you know, can you send us a little bit about you? Because we want to feature you in the Radio Times or TV, anything, you know, in our magazine because you use this product. And if you, and then you go, I haven't got a photo. I haven't got the thing. It's not in the right format. It's not. So creating that little press pack is like your spotlight CV, but in it for TV and and it means literally you can email it over without any stress. And I'd say to them, have all of, and this is me, I'm a carpenter for them on these shows. I'm not even there to really mentor them, but I'm like going, have all of that ready whilst the show's being edited and you've got like eight weeks before this goes live on BBC One. Flagship show, you know, for them, have it all ready so that you don't stress, because you won't be able to find a photographer on the day that you need it. You need to have it already. So I think if you're wanting to move over into TV presenting or news articles or paper, have those back of house stuff ready just to send over as quick as possible.
It's also alarming, even if you slightly look at that through an actor's lens, the amount of people that don't have their CV stored on like a G drive or Dropbox with headshots in their showreel and they have to wait to get home for their laptop. And I'm like, that's the difference sometimes between you getting a job or not. So I think having that EPK, that electronic press kit, is crucial nowadays.
Oh, God,
And that touches heavily on, like, I guess, knowing your personal brand or understanding that your skill set as a carpenter, yes, that may get you in the room, but it's actually you as a human that's going to help get you over the line. So I think that's really nice that people understand, like, oh, I am more than just, I'm not just an actor or just a presenter.
I touched on the orange thing.
And this is an accident, by the way. I will be your stunt double if you need.
And this was a happy accident. And again, these are things that you discover as you're doing it. Doing the Great Interior Design Challenge, it was filmed over 4 days. All the builders had to wear whatever they wanted to wear, but it had to be the same top for continuity, even though it was over 4 days. I went, can you all wear, if you can? So I literally went into H&M and picked up 5 t-shirts, and they happened to be orange. Picked them up, put them on. So it meant that I had a fresh t-shirt every day, is exactly the same. And if you watch any of those shows, that even the contestants are wearing the same outfit, they just wash them every day or whatever. Yeah. And then the TV production company were like, he looks really good on camera, does the orange. It's kind of bright and bubbly. And then I went, it's the same kind of orange. It was quite a garish orange at the time. It's the same orange as B&Q. So it kind of looks very DIY-y, subconsciously.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of other builders would wear, like, the ginghams or the checks and things. And also, I wasn't a named presenter then. I was just one of the builders in the background. And I was working on lots of garden, different shows. And I thought, well, if I were doing a show reel, I could put them all together and I'd be continuity throughout it. But then what that meant is, again, it was a happy accident, but it became a thing where I was the builder in orange. So no one ever knew my name. It was who's the builder in orange? Who's the guy in the background? So then when I started doing presenting in my own, I was like, I'm going to keep this going. So for the last 7, 8 years, I always wear orange. My wife's like, really? Do you have to now? And I was like, but people will, it takes that long for people to know who you are. And if you look at any of, you know, like any presenters that have a thing, it might be their glasses, it might be Harry Hill with his big collars, it might be things that make their a bit more identifiable. And the one day I remember doing Morning Live, my wife's like, come on, you're old enough now, you don't have to wear orange, you've been doing it long enough. And I didn't wear orange. I literally got my socials, even everyone in the production company on Morning Live was like, why are you not wearing orange? And they know that if I'm on the call sheet, none of the other presenters will wear orange that day. So it's become a little thing, and they'd laugh about it, but they get it. And, you know, I like it. I still wear orange, but it's just, it's become my thing. Yeah. And also, I'm a big advocate of wearing you happy. I'm a smiley person. I want to encourage people. It's not I don't want to be down about things. I'm always a positive spin on things. So it just feeds into that narrative of the TV carpenter is a happy chappy. It'll encourage you to pick up the tools and have a go. Little things, but it gets on there.
But and again, if you look back at people's success, it's not all the ripples you have from that first casting or that first meeting. They have to keep getting that same positive impression. They need to see your brand come across their table, CV, email, headshot, you in person, multiple times to buy into you. But once they do, again, they know, like, and trust you, and that will lead to more connections, more opportunities. Before we get to our little cheeky end section,
I'm
on a quick
scared
fire,
about this thing.
What advice would you give to someone who maybe wants to, they're a performer, freelancer, and they maybe want to get on the property ladder? So I know you're not all about mortgages and all that, but you are someone who works in that world.
Yeah.
What advice would you maybe give to someone, whether it's get a property, flip it, do buy to share, whatever it is, what advice would you maybe give to someone?
Just get on the ladder whichever which way you can. And I think the profit margins in London to flip are hard. My dad's a property developer up in Leeds, and it's a little bit easier because their properties aren't as expensive. I know people who've even bought out of London if their family are up north or wherever and they can get home enough. All of those things of sharing, doing the, you know, rent to buy schemes and all of that lot. If you can get in on it, do it. Make sure I've listened to your podcast about taxes as well, and just make sure your taxes are up to date and speak to a good financial advisor. My financial advisor was a lady who used to be an actress, so she understood actors, and she knew how to she was able to tell me what to do to make sure I can get the mortgage. But I think it's so hard now. I look at my 18-year-old daughter, 17-18-year-old daughter, thinking, how would she ever get on the property ladder? It is hard, but I think a lot of people start small and build your way up. But also, it's weird because I've just said all of that and I'm like, some people just don't want to own as well and want to go on holiday more. Do you know what I mean? And I think I'm at a stage now where we have a 1930s house, which we've renovated. So if anybody looks at my socials, I took 7 months off to renovate this house, which ended up being on the TV shows. They just came and filmed in the house and I did lots of live links, so it was perfect for me. But my wife, literally we'd moved in and she was like, I'm thinking about the loft. And I went, whoa, we're not talking about the loft for another 2 years. I've just done 7 months of getting us in. And now we're at a stage where, do we need to do the loft? No, I'd rather go on holiday more.
Yeah.
So we're at that stage now. So maybe you're at that stage.
Well, I just think I didn't even think about pensions until I got into my 30s. But I think have a little, plant a little seed, even if you just put a little bit of money away a week, that's wise. Also, this could be a stupid question, but I'm going to ask this because so many of my performer friends were like, how do we talk to builders when they come to our house? You work around them. Yeah. I'm like, I go, because I'm originally from Essex, but clearly I'm not like lads. But when they come around, I'm like, tea? And I'm like, what are the expectations? Can I just be me?
Of course you can. Absolutely. And this whole podcast is about people buying into people.
Yeah.
And I think that is the thing, that when builders come around, just chat with them, be honest. You know, I don't think every builder is out there to rob you. I think a builder is there to fix things and help you. Be clear about what you want and, you know, and just even, you know, if they're doing something, you go, look, I want this doing, but what's really important to me is that this bit is done correctly. Or I know that I want this light fit. I work with a lot of interior designers, so I know how meticulous things can be. If you just, because most builders will just do what they think you want. So they'll go, well, you want this putting up, I'll just do it because I've done 100 of these, you know. But like when I do my private carpentry, I do for wardrobes, for example, I'll fit it how I've fitted lots of wardrobes. But then I'll say to the client, is there anything particularly you want? And anything I can adjust or do? So I'd be clear, because there's nothing worse than they've done it. And then you then go, oh, I didn't know you were going to do it like that.
But yeah. I didn't know what you thought like that was. So just just be as transparent as possible.
I'm like, it's my greatest acting challenge. I'm Jamie. I've been on the tools, being a lad, but I'm just going to be me next time.
Just be you. Just be me. People buy into people.
So before I let you go, this is a little tidbit. It is called Lights, Questions, Action. And I'm just going to throw some quick fire questions about the industry, about you. Just whatever.
I love it's how like, you do this. And this is the bit that I'm dreading the
most. Clicks. I'm like, go. And I'm going to bring in everyone you know and love. Come in. Okay, so starting off. So live theatre or live TV, what's the most nerve-wracking?
Live TV.
What was your go-to audition song?
I'm old. So it was probably like the first ever ones were things like This Is The Moment. But then I ended up doing a bit of a Don Quixote just to show off because I'm a top tenor. But then I realised there's no acting in that, so it's rubbish.
First time buyer and they need to buy one tool. What one tool would you recommend to them?
A combination drill. It's called a combination drill because it's got a collar on it and it has lots of three different functions. So you can do flat pack furniture, drill a hole into something, and it has a hammer function, which means it can go through solid brick. Oh. Combination drill. It's your. And I teach at the Idle Home Show, and I'm doing teaching people how to use the combination drill in April at the Idle Home Show.
Okay, fabulous. Okay, what would be your dream TV show to present? Or if it doesn't exist, what would you want to present?
I love the makeover shows. I love all of those, but there's no money in them anymore, so nobody's making them. Yeah. Maybe like a grand design show, but abroad somewhere nice and warm, and then nice, the family gets to travel.
I feel like there's got to be a collaboration between you, like building a West End set in like 2 days for a show. There's got to be something out there.
Do you know what's interesting? TV, and I know these are quick fire, but quickly, the TV casting for and creating shows for TV is very different to theatre. You pitch the idea to production company. The production company will attach the presenter to it and then pitch that to the channel. So many times we've pitched shows with a musical theatre element to it, like an Amdram thing, or I had a thing like Escape to the Chateau where me and Anna would go in a van with the family and I'd build the carpentry. And at the end, we'd do a fundraising charity. There's always some kind of thing. And then all of a sudden I'd burst into song and they didn't expect it. Or Anna, leading West End Lady, would say... And they love the carpentry, but hate anything singing. It's really like you are one or the other. They don't like the singing carpenter thing. No, it got shut down. Never I really wanted to do it, but it got shut down quite easy. But I think it's all to do with rights of music.
I'm quite a big Hallmark film, and I felt that would be a Hallmark film I would watch, where you're just hammering and you're singing to the radio. Done.
Like the Dolly Parton one. Christmas Dolly Parton.
I do think of you when I think of Dolly. Yeah, thank you. So that was dream TV show. Dream musical you'd come out of retirement for?
Sunset Boulevard, playing the lead guy in that. But the old style one. Anna did the original one with Glenn Close, and it just, Michael Xavier, I want your role.
Okay, I'll see what I can do for you.
Yeah, thank you.
If you weren't in TV now, what would you want to be doing?
I don't know. This is where I'm at now. As in, what do I want to do? Travel more then. Travel. Something to do with travel. I keep saying it just because I've realised as I'm getting older, that's what I want to do more of.
You learn so much by travelling though, don't you? So
I've done a few cruise ship gigs, but... doing sets on them.
Oh.
So I just came back from a 3-week cross Atlantic on a brand new ship where you're stress testing a new ship, which is weird in the middle of Atlantic when you're the guinea pig on it. But that was amazing.
Industry buzzword you hate. So I had someone in PR, they were like, I hate the, I'm just doing a catch up. Like, do you have any industry buzzwords you hate, either from the theatre world or presenting TV world?
I'd say more from the interior design makeovery thing is, can you just, meaning, can you just put that up, which is then is like a 3-hour job. And you're like, if you'd have told me that ages ago, that'd have been fine. So can you just.
Pre-TV show ritual before you go on air, do you need to do anything? Cleanse your chakras? What do you need to do?
No, I have this little bracelet and I make them and they're just silver. And on it, it says, what's the best that can happen? Rather than what's the worst that can happen. And that came from 5 years ago doing my first morning live and we hadn't had time to rehearse. And they went, oh, we'll just do you when we do it. And I'm stood behind the set going, oh my God, 1.3 million people are going to see me do this. And we haven't fully rehearsed it. And it was the first time I felt like I was doing theatre again. And then I just remember thinking, well, what's the best that can happen is they'll get me back. Oh, the worst can happen is it might all go wrong and I don't come back. But and I went, what's the best that can happen? And then they've had me back for the last 5 years. So it worked.
Okay. Last two quick fire questions. If your life was a movie, who would play you?
Raza Jaffrey, because I covered him in Bombay Dreams and we look like brothers.
And you've just been on a podcast. So do you prefer podcast length voice notes or a simple text?
So I love a voice note and all my friends hate them and TV people hate them because they can't look back on them. But if you don't know on your WhatsApp, there's a little button at the top, you can press it and it'll just transcribe it into words. So even if they kick off, I go, just enable that, press that, and then you never have to listen to me. But they are full on 3 minutes.
Yeah. All I have to say is make sure you like, subscribe, and leave a comment wherever you watch or listen to your podcast. And also you have your own podcast as well. So yes. Make sure you check out Wayne's. What's it called?
It's called the TV Carpenter Podcast. On brand.
Well, there you go. We've got two podcasts at least for you to listen. Thank you so much.